ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of December. I'm Andy Park, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. Today, pressure builds on Ukraine to give up territory as Vladimir Putin warns Europe that Russia is ready for war. And with the government's social media ban imminent, have teens found a loophole to stay online?
Say you've got a 13-year-old, what they really worry about is that they're going to be left out. You know, they're just at the beginning of forming these kind of social connections. They will probably feel that if they don't have Snapchat or whatever they're using, they're going to be socially invisible.
Former Liberal staffer Bruce Lerman has lost his appeal against a finding that, on the balance of probabilities, he raped Brittany Higgins at Parliament House in Canberra in 2019. A criminal trial against Mr. Lerman in 2022 was abandoned due to juror misconduct. Mr. Lerman has consistently maintained his innocence. Reporter Elizabeth Byrne is covering the case and she joined me earlier. Elizabeth, what grounds did Bruce Lerman use to challenge the finding of the original federal court ruling?
Well, he had several grounds, four in fact, and these grounds arose out of his failed defamation case in the federal court, which he put in place when he found himself with no findings against him in the criminal sphere and sort of nowhere else to go. So he tried to sue Network 10 and Lisa Wilkinson over an interview that they did with Brittany Higgins. And it's out of his concerns about the things that were raised in that interview that the four grounds of appeal were generated and put to the Court of Appeal in the federal court. And today, Justice Michael Wigney gave the court's assessment of those grounds of appeal.
The full court has determined to dismiss Mr. Lerman's appeal with costs. The court has found that the primary judge did not err in any of the ways alleged by Mr. Lerman in his grounds of appeal and his submissions in support of them. The full court has found that the way in which the primary judge dealt with and determined the proceedings was not procedurally unfair to Mr. Lerman. The facts as found by the primary judge fell within the terms of Network 10 and Ms. Wilkinson's pleaded truth defence.
Justice Michael Wigney there, dismissing Bruce Lerman's appeal. So, Elizabeth, are his appeals exhausted now? Does Bruce Lerman have any other legal avenues for appeal?
Well, in the federal court, they are. There is always the possibility of asking the High Court to have a look at a case. Doesn't mean that the High Court would take it on, but, you know, you can always make your application. But given that he's had trouble finding lawyers and in this instance only had his solicitor to represent him, and most of the lawyers that have worked on this case from the criminal trial through to the defamation trial all worked for free, we now know. So he might have some difficulty finding some help to take it to the High Court, although there are people who represent themselves there as well.
Justice Wigney referenced cost in his dismissal of this appeal. What does that mean? And what is the likelihood that Mr. Lerman will have to pay costs?
Well, obviously the court has ordered it. Unless the High Court were to say, we'll hear this case and we'll put the costs on hold for a while. But I think it's looking fairly grim for Mr. Lerman. He already has a $2 million bill waiting for him from Network 10. Now, Network 10 said that the costs were actually much greater than that, but the court has determined that $2 million is the figure, and he will need to deal with that one way or another. Now, we already know that he's impecunious, has limited job opportunities, so that's unlikely to be paid in the near future. And so it may be the case that bankruptcy proceedings are looming, although it remains to be seen how that will unfold.
Elizabeth Byrne there. Victorians were gripped by the mysterious disappearance of two campers in the state's remote high country 5 years ago. Last year, former Jetstar pilot Greg Lynn was sentenced to 32 years jail for the murder of Carol Clay, but was acquitted of murdering her camping companion Russell Hill. But there's more to Greg Lynn's story, which can only now be reported after a long-standing suppression order lifted last night regarding the unexpected death of Lynn's first wife, Lisa. Rachel Brown is the host of the new podcast Unravel, Huntsman, and she joined me earlier. Rachel, tell me about Lisa Lynn and why her family still have questions about her death in 1999.
She was a 34-year-old mother of two boys under three. She met pilot Greg Lynn in the Air Force in the 80s and was initially besotted. That relationship soured, morphed into taunts, cruelty to neighbours' pets by Greg Lynn, death threats. He once said to her, "I could arrange to have you killed and make it look like an accident." She took out an intervention order, which he breached. And 7 months later, Andy, she was found dead on her lawn. She was wearing pyjamas, no shoes. There was an empty glass beside her with a slice of lemon in it. A car door beside her. Her car was, the door was open and the keys in the ignition, but not running. And then inside the house, in the locked house, were her two young boys. There was an empty bottle of vodka, a blister pack of sleeping tablets, a Nick Cave song, "Nobody's Baby Now," playing on repeat over and over and over. And on the lounge room floor was scattered photos and the contents of her wallet. Now, the family have always been perplexed about certain details of the scene that might have looked innocuous to detectives, but they say and said to detectives at the time, look, Lisa rarely drank and she was always vigilant when she was minding the boys, so why would she take a cocktail of alcohol and prescription medications while minding her son? Why would she bother with a lemon garnish in the drink if she was intending to drink herself into oblivion? She hated Nick Cave. She liked listening to Enya and church music. Nick Cave was actually, we learned in the campus trial last year, was a favourite musician of Greg Lynn. And then, of course, there were things missing from the house. There was her diary and answering machine tapes, old tapes that had records of Greg Lynn's threats on them.
Was her husband Greg Lynn questioned and investigated about her death at the time?
I would say more. He gave a statement at the time of his whereabouts. He wasn't considered a suspect because police at the time looked at the scene. They didn't think there was anything suspicious. They didn't see any signs of anyone else there. A coroner ruled that because she hadn't left a note, it was unclear whether she'd intended to take her own life. But the scene to the police and the coroner was unsuspicious. Greg Lynn told police, yes, I made these death threats, but they're in the heat of the moment. Never intended to carry them out. He denied any involvement in her death. He said that that night he was doing a solo pub crawl in northeast Melbourne. He showed police receipts for cigarettes and dinner. But, Andy, now police are having another look. Since he was arrested for the disappearance of the two campers, Russell Hill and Carol Clay, police have been quietly chipping away in the background and for the last 3 years have interviewed 60 people. And that's for a new brief that they want the coroner to have a look at.
Lisa Lynn's family have spoken to you for the first time. What are they asking for? What would they like to happen now?
They would like this new brief of evidence to be considered by the coroner. They think Lisa's death deserves another look and they hope that an inquest would be held. It's been such a long wait for them and this has finally come to light, as you said, because the suppression order has lifted overnight. But these people's voices have been stifled for a long time. So they're also hoping that even just these conversations about coercive control, that, you know, it's more prevalent in society, that if we talk about this, it might help other people in similar climates of coercion.
The ABC's Rachel Brown there. And for more on that story, you can search for the podcast Unravel, Huntsman podcast on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're in an abusive situation or know someone who is, you can call 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732 and call 000 in an emergency. Well, economists and policymakers might be disappointed today at new GDP figures, which show only a slight jump in growth and lower than expected. The economy grew just 0.4% in the September quarter, seasonally adjusted, when 0.7 was widely anticipated. Business reporter David Taylor joined me a short time ago. David, what do these figures show about the health of the Australian economy?
Well, Andy, the Bureau of Statistics describes the growth rate in the Australian economy as steady, but let's go through it individually. So quarterly, the growth was driven by domestic final demand, essentially private investment, so businesses spending, and household consumption. That's where you and I go to the shops and spend up, perhaps for Christmas, well ahead of Christmas in this case, because it's the September quarter. What's really interesting about this data, though, Andy, is that inventories detracted from growth. So businesses store up inventories when they think business is going to run ahead of them in order to make sure that when demand eventually comes, people can buy products from their shops and services. In this case, they've actually let inventories run down. So that maybe points to how businesses see demand around the corner. But in addition to that, there was a net trade deficit. So we actually imported more and exported less. Imports outpaced exports. So that gives you an idea of the sort of makeup of growth in the economy, but at the moment it looks like household consumption is supporting the economy somewhat.
Over the past couple of years, we've focused on GDP per capita to get a sense of how individual households fare in the economy. What do these figures tell us about that?
Yeah, well, with GDP per capita, you're looking at the overall slice of the economic pie that households have. And it's related to basically the economic growth of the whole economy divided by the number of people in the population. And again, what's interesting about this data is that we've got the economy growing a little bit, but we've also got the population growing a little bit. So GDP per capita, therefore, was flat for the quarter. But over the year, if you add it all up, because that's just for the September quarter, if you add it up over the year, it's a 0.4 percentage growth picture there. So clearly, households have, especially at the end of last calendar year and towards the beginning of this year, households were really feeling it. And in fact, if you'd said to someone, do you feel like you're going backwards? The answer would have probably been yes. At this point, wages have picked up just enough and many people are in work that households, they're not going backwards, but they probably don't feel like they're going forwards either.
Now, it's an exciting time of year for policy watchers as many important individuals appear before Senate estimates. In this case, the Reserve Bank Governor, Michelle Bullock, has been before estimates today. What has she said?
Well, Andy, it's certainly the hot seat, that's for sure. Look, overnight, for some context, the OECD upgraded its China GDP forecast. So we've just been talking about Australian growth. China looks to be growing at around 5% for the calendar year 2025, at least according to the OECD. Now, China accounts for 30%, a third of Australian exports. So it's incredibly crucial to the Australian economy. And at this point, there doesn't seem to be any dark storm clouds on the horizon, but that doesn't mean the Reserve Bank isn't looking for some. RBA Governor Michelle Bullock has said to the Economics Committee that she's expressed concern about China's growth rate, especially as it relates to manufacturing.
What happens in China is very important to us, and what we observe there is that the real estate market in China is still very much in the doldrums, that at the moment they're managing to offset that with growth in other areas, but there's still a risk to growth in China. I think that's something that's sort of at the top of our mind as well.
Michelle Bullock there. And Andy, just in terms of interest rates, because there'll be hundreds of thousands, if not millions of mortgage borrowers wanting to know how this particular data set affects that. Well, the economy has slowed a little bit from the June quarter. It slowed roughly 0.2% for the September quarter from the June quarter. So I don't think this puts any pressure, certainly on the Reserve Bank, to hike interest rates, but I don't think any economists will be rushing to change their forecasts of a potential rate cut either.
David Taylor there. Thanks for listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on the Listen app. Subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search for The World Today. In exactly 1 week, children under the age of 16 will be officially banned from a raft of social media sites in Australia. But at the 11th hour, a couple of new apps not yet covered by the ban have had a sudden spike in downloads. And if new platforms can keep popping up outside the ban, some are questioning how effective any ban might be. Here's Luke Radford.
They're apps it seems no one on the streets of Melbourne have heard of.
Never. Have never heard those words.
No, never heard of it until now.
I believe that they're sort of like copycat kind of thing.
Never heard of them. Of course, I am 74.
Despite mystifying these Australians, Yope and Lemon 8 have become hot property on the local app charts.
Your group chat has no lore. We're making an app to fix that.
Every day you have the opportunity to send photos to your friends and automatically make a collage you can react to.
That's because, for now at least, they're not covered by the government's imminent social media ban for people under 16. Lizzie O'Shea is a lawyer and chairs the group Digital Rights Watch.
So the issue is that there's a list of social media apps that the government has indicated come within the scope of the ban. But there is, you know, a definition that is designed to be flexible. There's an exclusion for messaging and gaming. And so there's a question about whether some of these other apps that do similar things that might look a bit more like, say, a messaging app in the case of Yope, come within scope.
The platforms themselves appear keenly aware. Lemon 8 has been running paid ads on TikTok for weeks, promoting itself as an alternative. And while the eSafety Commission has signalled those apps will now likely be included in the ban, experts believe kids will keep seeking out new ones. Lizzie O'Shea again.
Maybe there will be other applications that people think should be within scope and the government comes under political pressure to include them, even if that wasn't the original intention. So I think there is going to be a lot of movement with this policy because it's so public, it's so contentious, it's been debated and discussed for such a long time that people's expectations may also mean that it shifts.
Back on the streets of Melbourne, opinions are divided over whether the ban is a good idea and if it will work.
Yes, social media is social media and it has its positives, but it has a lot of negatives, especially for kids. So blanket ban, I never thought I'd say this, but yeah, I'm all for it.
I don't think it will work. As for why they should be banned, it is complicated. I'm just worried because these are people who've grown up with only social media. They've never known before, whereas of a certain generation, we had to preoccupy ourselves without it. And so I am worried about withdrawal.
Those who the ban directly affects, kids under the age of 16, are even less confident. In a survey of more than 17,000 young people conducted by the ABC's Behind the News program, just 6% think the ban will be effective. 75% of those polled said they plan to keep using social media despite the ban. Communications Minister Annika Wells has maintained that while it won't be perfect, the government won't give up on the ban and won't let social media platforms off the hook. Education expert Dr. Joanne Orlando says it's going to be a big change and parents need to support their kids through it.
Say you've got a 13-year-old. What they really worry about is that they're going to be left out. You know, they're just at the beginning of forming these kind of social connections. They're right at the beginning of adolescence. So they will probably feel that if they don't have Snapchat or whatever they're using, they're going to be left out. They're going to be socially invisible. So you need to think of ways then, okay, well, what can we do?
Despite not coming into effect yet, the laws are already being tested in the High Court. Advocacy group the Digital Freedom Project is attempting to have the ban struck down on the basis it restricts young people's implied right to freedom of political communication.
That report by Luke Radford and Kathleen O'Connor. Let's head overseas now. In a meeting between Russian President Vladimir Putin and US officials on a potential plan to end the war in Ukraine has concluded after nearly 5 hours of talks. It's not clear yet how much closer negotiators are to securing peace. It comes after the Russian president restated he has no plans to attack Europe, but that he'd be ready if any European countries launched an attack on Russia. Here's Bridget Fitzgerald.
So pleased to see you.
There was a cordial exchange of pleasantries as Russia's President Vladimir Putin welcomed US Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and the son-in-law of the US President Donald Trump, Jared Kushner, to Moscow.
Yes, it's a magnificent city.
US officials visited the Kremlin in a renewed push to broker a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine. Talks concluded after nearly 5 hours, with a Russian advisor telling reporters the meeting was productive, but that there's more to do. Neither side has disclosed the substance of the negotiations. Donald Trump says he wants the conflict to end.
What a mess. It's a war that never would have happened if I were president.
As the US delegation visited Russia, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was in Ireland, where he secured 125 million euros in military and energy support. Meanwhile, President Putin has accused Europe of sabotaging negotiations to end the war, blaming European countries for adding amendments to the prospective peace deal that are unacceptable to Russia. He repeated he had no plans to attack Europe, but says Russia would defend itself.
We're not going to have a war with Europe, I've already said. But if Europe suddenly wants to wage a war with us and starts it, we are ready right away. There can be no doubt about that.
Ahead of the talks, the Russian military released footage it says shows the capture of the Ukrainian city of Pokrovsk, a strategically important city in the Donetsk region. Ukrainian officials deny the city's been captured and describe the video as propaganda. Maria Snegovaya is a senior fellow with the Europe, Russia and Eurasia program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
While the loss of Pokrovsk is probably unavoidable at this point, it's not going to be a major blow to Ukraine's strategic and defense positions altogether. In fact, according to some analysts, Ukraine's positions, despite the observed situation on the ground, have actually improved.
Maria Snegovaya says she believes the peace deal will collapse because Vladimir Putin won't make concessions that Ukraine is seeking, namely that Russia hands back the territory it's claimed, including the eastern Donbass region and the southern Crimean Peninsula that was annexed in 2014. However, other experts disagree.
The reality is that Russia does have the upper hand here.
Dr. Marianne Hansen is an Associate Professor of International Relations at the University of Queensland.
In some ways, it's futile for the rest of Europe to insist on keeping this war going. If anything, to the last Ukrainian standing, it's the Ukrainians who have paid the dreadful price for this war. And here we are, years down the track. It really has to be brought to an end.
Dr. Hansen says she doesn't believe Russia intends to attack the rest of Europe. She says Ukraine must concede that it's unlikely to reclaim the territory lost in the war. And one solution could be to offer those in occupied territories a vote on whether to secede from Ukraine and officially become part of Russia.
The likelihood is any such plebiscite would go in Russia's favour because the majority populations there, including in Crimea, of course, are very much pro-Russian rather than pro-Kiev.
Ukraine has previously said it won't concede any of its sovereign territory to Russia.
That's Bridget Fitzgerald. Aussie women's soccer team, the Matildas, have won their final match of the year with a 2-0 victory over New Zealand in Adelaide. Star striker Sam Kerr made a return from injury and played on Australian soil for the first time in 2 years. While the players will now head back to their own clubs around the world, their friendly tour against the Kiwis certainly seemed to have a lasting impact on up-and-coming players here in Australia. Emma Simpkin has the story.
Fans of all ages revelled in Australian captain Sam Kerr's return to home soil.
Down to Kerr, tries to chest the ball down. It's been lost on the edge of the area. Shot for goal from Sam Kerr. A snapshot just outside the box, and it was just curling away from the target.
Sam Kerr says last night's match was a reminder of why she loves the game.
I think sometimes we lose sight of why we play football, and tonight just felt like one of those moments where I could just really go out there and enjoy it and have fun.
After 2 years sidelined with injury, the Matildas captain says despite only playing the first half of last night's match, she's recovering well.
Yeah, it feels good. That's why I wanted to keep going, but it's a bit of a weird one, such a small injury, but I guess you just have to be cautious with it, especially where I've come from the last 18 months, unfortunately.
The two-match friendly against New Zealand gave young fans the chance to see their favourite players up close for the first time in a few years and comes in the lead-up to next year's Asian Cup in Australia. After last night's match in Adelaide, Sam Kerr gave away her boots to two delighted young fans. 10-year-old Sia Morris was in the crowd in Gosford to watch the Matildas last Friday night.
The game was very interesting. It was fun. The stadium vibe was absolutely brilliant. There was a lot of cheering. It was very loud. The goals were absolutely brilliant. Hayley Rasso and Kara Kounikos were probably the star players in my eyes.
Sia Morris is playing in the midfield for the under-11s Central Coast Mariners Academy and hopes she too can one day represent Australia.
I love the physical part of playing midfield because I love how you can just knock them off the ball and steal it and keep running up the field. Seeing them play great on the field makes me want to go out there and just do the same thing as what they're doing.
At the match in Gosford, she caught a glimpse of her idol, Sam Kerr.
They were like maybe, I don't know, like 10 rows in front of us. So it was very exciting when we called out Sam Kerr and she just turned around and gave us a cheeky wave. So
3 years ago, she held a sign aloft in the crowd when the Matildas last visited Gosford. It read, "Sam Kerr, you are to me what Cathy Freeman was to you." Her mother, Ash, says supporting the next generation of Matildas can be demanding, but it's already rewarding.
It's been really enjoyable, I'm going to be honest. It's a lot of commitment, but you meet some, you know, other amazing families. They end up becoming your friends because you spend most of your week with them. And it's really enjoyable. The siblings get to know each other. There's a lovely community here on the Central Coast. And, you know, like it's watching her do what she loves, though, is It melts my heart. You can't want for more as a parent.
Proud mum Ash Morris there, ending that report by Emma Simkin. And that's all from The World Today team. Thanks for your company. Hope you can join me tomorrow. I'm Andy Park.
Hello, I'm Sydney Peed from ABC News Daily podcast. Australian property is now more expensive than ever, and soaring mortgage debt has the financial regulator hitting the brakes on risky lending. Today, Ian Verinder on why APRA is targeting property investors and whether it could finally offer some relief for house hunters. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.